Hello, and welcome back to This Day in History. We're your host, Taylor.
And Emily. And today we have a special guest, our older sister, Lauren.
Hello,
Thanks for joining us, Lauren. Today, our day in history is going to be July 17th, 1918. Emily, what can you tell us about the year 1918?
hello. Well, that was the year that World War I ended. Interestingly, there was a solar eclipse. What a coincidence, since we're having a solar eclipse this year, too.
Oh, it's true.
Another coincidence was that's when the first case of the Spanish flu was reported in Kansas.
Yeah, and the Spanish flu was pretty awful. It said like 500 million people were infected, and almost 50 to 100 million people died from the Spanish flu.
Well, that sounds eerily reminiscent of 2020. So, ugh.
1918 also was when the US Congress approved daylight savings.
What?
And 1918 also was the year of the San Juancito earthquake that was in San Diego County and had a magnitude of 6.7.
Well, also in 1918 was the date that we're talking about, which was July 17th, which was the massacre of the Romanov family, including the Romanov sisters, which is what we're going to be focusing on today, which I realize is like a very sad topic. For today's episode, we chose it because all three of us were going to be doing the episode, and these are also sisters, but obviously it's kind of morbid because they had a really bad end.
Woof. And because we loved the movie Anastasia as a kid.
Yeah.
We might have it playing in the background on mute.
So the Romanov sisters were Grand Duchesses Olga, Tatiana, Maria, and Anastasia, and they were born in that order. And I'll start with their parents, the last Tsar and Tsarina of Russia, Nicholas II, and Alexandra Fedorovna. Alexandra was born a princess of Hesse and Bahrain. She was a German princess, and she was a granddaughter of Queen Victoria. Her mother was Princess Alice, which was one of the daughters of Victoria. And Alexander was born on June 6th, 1872.
June 6th. That's a good
Yeah.
day. Huh.
People
It's my birthday. It's also D-Day.
called her Sunny when she was little. They also call her Alecky. And when she was really little, like I think she was about, I want to say she was about six, her whole family had a big outbreak of diphtheria. Because I believe I'm sure this was before any vaccines were available for the condition. And she not only lost her close little sister, but she lost her mother, Alice. Can y'all tell us about diphtheria?
So essentially, diphtheria is caused by a bacteria, and it mostly affects the back of the throat. Diphtheria is a bacteria that we now vaccinate all of our kids against. It's actually in the Tdap, tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. Diphtheria causes a sheet of thick gray matter that covers the back of the throat, making it hard to breathe.
This is often thought to be when she lost a lot of her sunny disposition. She became very introverted, very serious after the death of her sister and her mother. And she also became very close to her grandmother, Queen Victoria. Often people say that Alex was Victoria's favorite or one of her favorite grandchildren. She spent some of her childhood in England, obviously, where Victoria was queen.
Yeah, I can't imagine being the granddaughter of Queen Victoria, considering Queen Victoria was so proper, and she also had a lot of sadness in her own life after losing Albert.
So, at a wedding when Alex was about 12, this was the wedding of Alex's older sister Elizabeth to Grand Duke Sergei, who was the uncle to Alex's future husband. At the wedding, Alex met Nicholas, who was the son of the current Tsar. So, he was the Tsarevich. It's like basically the heir to the Russian throne. The Russian ruler is called Tsar.
Did you know that the word czar comes from the Roman word for Caesar, which means emperor? Caesar, czar. Here we go. All I can think about is when you said Nicholas, I think of Nicholas, Nicholas Flamel. Who's Nicholas Flamel? I don't know. Right?
From Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
The Russian rulers were within the Romanov family, and they are descended by a previous episode focus or topic, Catherine the Great. Remember her?
Yeah, she really liked horses. Emily.
Both Nicholas and Alex fell for one another. Nicholas' parents were like, They did not want a German princess for the heir of the Russian throne. And Queen Victoria also was not down for this. She thought Russia was really unstable, that she didn't really think it was going to be safe for Alex. And with what happens, Victoria ended up being right. So I guess you should always listen to your grandmother. And remember, everyone is related, right? All of these royal people are related. So Alex and Nicholas were also second cousins. Keeping it in the family.
Ooh, it's very strange. What do second cousins mean?
Your second cousin is like, instead of it being your parents' sibling's child, it's your grandparent sibling's child. So this was when they were teens. I believe she was about 12 when she met Nicholas, and time passes. They both still love each other, or like are really into each other, obviously, and no one can really convince them to look for other partners.
So technically, they had a true love match. They really loved each other.
Seems like it. So meanwhile, the current czar, Alexander III, his health is really declining fast. Eventually, he approve this possible marriage between Alex and Nicholas. But then Alex is like, no, thank you. She turns him down. And she says it's because she's Lutheran and she doesn't want to convert to the Russian Orthodox faith. So after all of this waiting, she was like, actually, I don't really want to marry you.
It does seem very strange, though, to wait all that time and then finally be like, oops, actually, we're a different religion. There must be an ulterior motive.
Well, at this point, she was like in her early 20s. Her father had already passed away, and so her brother was now, I can't remember what land they had, but like I guess Hessen by the Rhine or somewhere in Germany. And she had been acting as kind of like, not like the first lady, but like the woman that's related to the leader who like runs all the social things or whatever. But then her brother got married. And so her future was kind of like uncertain because she wasn't married yet. She didn't really have a role. Also, the sister that I mentioned earlier who married that one Russian dude, she also had the same, she ha had to convert too, right? And so she was like, well, told her sister, you don't really have to convert. Like, you don't have to give up your Lutheran faith. Somehow that convinced her. And second time around must have been the charm because then she accepted his proposal. So now they're getting married. Wedding bells.
Ow!
Not long after she accepted the proposal, they both went to England and they attended the christening of the oldest son of the future King George V. So King George V is the first cousin of Nicky. I'll call him Nicky because it's easier to say.
And they looked identical. They, if
Yeah.
you Google pictures of Nicholas the Second and George the Fifth, they look like they're twins.
They really do. This son is the future Edward the Eighth. Now, who's that guy?
Is he the one that abdicated his throne?
Yes, Lauren wins.
Woohoo! Wallace Simpson! Yeah, because of Wallace Simpson. True love.
Which I kind of want to do her the future episode, so maybe y'all can stay tuned and listen to that episode. And they are both godparents to Edward the Eighth, which I didn't know that. It's kind of neat. Everyone is connected. On November 1st, 1894, Alexander the Third finally did die, I believe, of kidney failure. He was only 49. And that meant that Tsar, her husband, or her future husband, Nikki, is now Tsar Nicholas II.
That seems rather young to be in charge of an entire humongous country.
Yeah, he was like in his mid-20s. Also, he was now in charge of a sixth of the world. The following day, she did finally join the Russian Orthodox Church as Grand Duchess Alexandra Fedorovna. Now, the last name, typically, if you like your father is already in the Russian church, I believe it that second name is like based off that man's name. So their children, it's like first name and then Nikolaevna or something like that. And but her name is different because her father was not of that faith. On November 26th, 1894, Alex and Nikki were married. Wedding bells. But it was kind of a somber event because like his dad just died, so they were not super happy. Also, it happened on the birthday of Nikki's mother. Like, why would you do that? That's silly. Her name was Dowager Empress Maria Fedorovna, and the Queen's podcast just did an episode, like I think actually it might be a three-parter, all about her. So you can go check that podcast out for info on his mother.
Oh, I love the Queen's podcast.
I do too.
Shout out.
This is just the beginning of her time, of Alex's time in Russia. The Russian people never ever warm up to her. They don't like her. So just keep that in the back of your head. On May 14th, 1896, was the coronation of Alex and Nikki at the Ma Moscow Kremlin. Side note, in Russia during this time, they used the old calendar, and I am using the new calendar dates. So if you were to Google this, you might find slightly different dates because of that discrepancy. So just keep that in mind. So in May, they had their coronation about 2 years after they got married. And this was a big, you know, a big celebration for the whole country. And there was a public celebration. And it was an area called Kadunka Field. And they were going to hand out these like souvenir gifts. It was like a mug and it had an image of the couple on it, I believe. And it had food and like pretzels and sausage and gingerbread, like a cute little like souvenir. And you see that now with the coronation of Charles III and stuff like that. They also do things. So I think it's similar to that. And they were expecting like hundreds of thousands of people, but they did not staff enough police and people to keep everything in line. And there was a rumor that got out that, oh, they're going to run out of these souvenirs. And so it started the stampede event. This field was like not the best spot for this event because there were all of these trenches. It caused this horrible stampeding event. People were like falling in the ditches and getting trampled, and then people were falling on top of them and getting trampled, and it caused like a mass casualty event.
That probably was not a good look to have
No.
this horrible thing happen right when you're being coronated. Probably like made people think that his reign was cursed. And
Yeah.
was it? We shall find out.
So the official death toll was around 1,300 people, but there's other numbers as close as like 3,000 to 4,000. And there was like a ball. I want to say it was put on by like the French ambassador or something like that. They still attended it instead of like canceling it out of respect for all these people who lost their lives. And it made the public really, it just did not look good.
Right, they were ignoring the big tragedy that just happened to go to a
And I
ball.
do think the couple did things to try to help the victims, but I think it got overshadowed, or was it enough because they still didn't, you know, didn't look good. So, like Lauren said, this was really, really not a good start for the new Tsar and Tsarina of Russia. So now Alex was Empress of Russia. At this point, she was like 22 and he was about 26.
Hey, you know, that's better than a lot of other couples in Europe in terms of, you know, the years between a couple. Because usually there's like, you know, a 16-year-old girl and a 40-year-old man, so
And they actually like loved each other.
exactly.
They perceived her as being very cold and arrogant. Really, she was pretty shy and she was pretty introverted. She was very Victorian, very like reserved. She wasn't going to give away a lot in her emotions. That didn't play well with the crowd or with the other nobles. And it was considered that she was not very good as her role in her role as Tsarina. So she wasn't leading all these like social events, you know, balls, stuff like that. She wasn't doing that. She really wasn't into the fashion. She liked very more subdued looks. And the Russian people were like all about going out with the glam. Her French also was not the best. That was the official language for the Russian court. She couldn't speak it super well, and I'm sure that did not help with her being isolated. Also, she had mother-in-law problems. Dun dun dun. Again, her name was Maria Fedorovna. Because of how the rank worked in Russia as Dowager Empress, Maria sometimes outranked her daughter-in-law. So when they would go to events, Nikki would walk in with his mother on his arm, and then Alex would walk behind them. But that's just how the customs were. It's kind of strange.
Well, that sounds very annoying. If I was a new bride and then the mother-in-law is getting all of the limelight.
I agree. Also, Maria had all of those crown jewels. So often with crown jewels of whatever country, they're owned by the state of the crown, but they're in the possession of the empress. And Maria was like, ugh, I don't want to give these up. And it took her a while to finally like release her grip on these jewels that were supposed to be in the possession of Alexandra. Do y'all know typically what the main job of an empress or queen is?
To have babies.
Oh, yes, that was their main goal, was to
To have
have
boy
boys.
babies.
Exactly. And so at some point, Alex was like feeling faint, like she wasn't doing well. And they were like, oh, great, she must be pregnant. Like they saw her like struggling, probably in her like early stages of pregnancy. And they were like, yeah, she was like, shit, she's probably pregnant. And she got pregnant fairly early. Their first baby was born on November 15th, 1895. Her name was Olga, which when I hear the name Olga, I think of Hey Arnold.
It's Olga Pataki. Gosh.
And so I'll go through the daughters real quick, kind of in a row, and I'll tell you the dates they were born. So Olga was born in 1895, and she was a 10-pound baby.
Woof. That sucks for Alexandria.
Yeah. So people were obviously like, dang, it's not a son. They were all like sad. But Alex and Nikki were like over the moon. They're like, yeah, she's great. She's healthy. She's their first daughter. She's really doted upon. But question, could Olga, a daughter, inherit the Russian throne?
Well, there was Al or well, there was Catherine the Great, but her reign was, did she like have a coup and pretty much stole it from her husband and then maybe had him killed? So my guess would be no, Olga cannot become czar.
It's partly because of Catherine. So Catherine's son, Paul, who was Paul the First, when he was emperor, he passed this law that basically said that women could not inherit the throne. So for Olga or any daughter of this couple didn't inherit the throne, every other male in the entire line, like uncles, everything would have to be gone. So C Catherine the Great is partially to view at fault. Not really, her son, but he was kind of a jerk.
Because men can't stand strong women.
So the next daughter was born on June 10th, Tatiana. She was only like 8 pounds and 3/4, so less than her sister. And again, people were disappointed. Nikki was happy that they had a child, another daughter, but Alex was becoming more and more anxious about having a son. Again, on June 26th, 1899, their third daughter, Maria, was born. Queen Victoria like wrote a letter to Alex and was like, "Oh, I'm happy you're doing well, but I'm disappointed to know the sex of the baby." Like she was like, "Oh, I'm glad you're doing great, but I'm kind of bummed that your daughter is not a son."
Isn't it very annoying that throughout history it was always like the woman's fault if she didn't have a son? When re in real life, if a woman is XX and a male is XY, then who determines the sex? That would be the man.
On June 18th, 1901, their youngest daughter, Anastasia, was born. And she, again, was big. She was 11 and a half pounds.
What? 11 and a half? Ugh.
Poor Alex. Ugh. And so at this point, they had four daughters, no sons, and the couple, especially Alex, was really desperate for that son. And after four daughters, the Russian people were even less approving of this empress. So Alex was under a lot of stress. Also, I just want to point out here that they have three of the four daughters were June babies. I think that's interesting.
What does that mean? That means that was there a holiday in the fall that was very special to them?
Means they're all
Or
Geminis.
July? What's wrong with that?
Anyway, so at one point she had a molar pregnancy. I've heard this described for her as either a phantom or a molar pregnancy. I'm not exactly sure which is which, or if which one was true, I mean. So this happened after, I believe, Anastasia. Also, when she was pregnant with Anastasia, Queen Victoria died. So Queen Victoria died just a few months before Anastasia was born. And Alex could not attend the funeral for Victoria, but they had like a special thing that was in Russia. Alex did cry, and this was like one of the first times that a lot of people saw Alex like show so much emotion when she lost her grandmother. Because remember, she lost her mother at like the age of six, and so she lost her other mother figure at this point, and she was like largely pregnant, super stressed out, so kind of sad.
That is sad. And because she couldn't really show emotions until then.
Yeah, at least not in public. So after four daughters, like I said, they were pretty desperate for that son. The lack of a son was seen by the public as a failure by Alex. And because they got married so quick after the previous czar had died, they thought, oh, like she brought in this bad omen. Like that, like her getting married and the tales of this death brought upon Russia like a bad omen. And the Russian people were kind of superstitious type of bunch. So people did not like her. It was just, she didn't really have a good start. So she was starting to turn to like some mystics, started to turn to some quack doctors.
Bum bum bum.
At one point, there was this guy named Felipe. I heard him described as a dubious, quote, doctor, as in he's not really a doctor. He claimed that he could change the sex of the baby in the womb using magnets.
It's amazing how far modern medicine has taken us.
Eventually, in 1904, Alex gave birth to Alexei, bum ba da ba, a son. He was also 11 and a half pounds.
Something does not make sense about all these humongous babies.
I don't know how big Maria was, so maybe she was the odd man out. The whole empire was rejoicing. They had a 301 gun salute. Everyone was ecstatic. People stopped working and they went to go party. So if you were like at work and you're like, oh, this happened, and then you drop everything at work, go home, and you just open the champagne. He was named after Peter the Great's father. But when he was only about 6 weeks old or so, he started bleeding through his navel, and it took a full 2 days for this to stop. And at this point, they realized that he had hemophilia. Now, during this time, hemophilia was called the royal disease. And who spread hemophilia across all the royal families of Europe?
So the interesting thing about hemophilia is that it is an X-linked dominant disease, which means that it's a disease that is attached to the X chromosome. So therefore, as women are XX and men are XY, it is mostly inherited through a maternal pattern. So the person who was the carrier and who spread this all over the world was Queen Victoria herself. And so essentially hemophilia in a woman, they are a carrier, but in a male, if they have the dominant chromosome, then they inherit the disease. So with hemophilia, essentially, you don't have enough clotting factors. So if you were to fall and hit your head, you could just have a brain bleed. In children, it can present like his did, where you're bleeding from your navel or your belly button. But it's a pretty serious and devastating disease, especially back then.
There had been some concern that Alex was a carrier because, again, she was the granddaughter of Queen Victoria. Her mother, Alice, had inherited it, and then she passed it on to her only son and heir to the Russian throne, Alexei. So this was pretty devastating. I think she was really ashamed that she had given it to her son. Obviously, she didn't do it on purpose. She can't help it, but she knew it was her, it came from her, which is unfortunate because there's nothing that she could have done that could have prevented this.
Right. I mean, there was no medical treatment back then. We have treatment for it now. It's still a difficult disease. Back then, it was devastating. And honestly, it could have been why she, if she had miscarriages, that could be one reason why, is that if she had, a male baby, they could have had a hemorrhage in utero and died.
I didn't
So.
know that. I read that during this time, the kind of like theory why this disease caused so much bleeding was because the vessels were weak. They didn't know it was caused by a clotting factor yet. They knew it was genetic, like they knew that you could inherit it from your ancestors. This meant that the heir to the Russian throne was very weak.
He was very fragile, right? He was
He was very
fragile.
fragile.
So if he was someone who probably had to be like very well protected and probably
Exactly.
couldn't jump on the bed or, ride horses because if he fell, he'd die.
Something really small could just cause bleeding. Alex's little brother, I believe he was about three, two or three, when she was still a child, her brother had fallen out the window. Maybe if a typical child could have survived, you know, I don't know, a broken bone or something, but her brother had hemophilia, and so he bled out. There's also other stories of people who have inherited hemophilia from Victoria, males who died young, either as children or as young men. But the public, the general public, and a lot of people did not know that Alexei had this disease. Obviously, if everyone knew he was weak and he could die young, that would hurt the succession of the Romanov line. So they were not going to tell everybody. And at this point, the life expectancy of a child who had hemophilia was about 13 years old. But let me go back to the daughters a little bit. I want to describe them. Olga, again, was the oldest. She's considered the smartest, the most studious, very serious. I think she had a kind of a typical oldest daughter syndrome.
Pardon? How rude. She was the smartest, though, so ha.
She was said to be very caring, even from a very young age. She was always asking questions, very curious. She was the kind of woman or girl who spoke her mind, was not afraid to speak up. Her relationship when she was older, like an older teenager, with her mother, her relationship was a bit difficult. They didn't always get along. I think it was because her mother put a lot of pressure on her to keep her siblings in line, and she couldn't always control them. Like Alexei would be acting out, and her mother would be like, "Olga, get it together," and she'd be like, "I can't help it. I can't help. I can't control the kid." You know, it was that kind of situation. Tatiana was very pretty with dark curls and really long, large eyes. Her and Olga were called the big pair. And Tatiana was said to look very much like her mother. She was the closest to her mother. She took care of her mother a lot, and she was said to be her mom's favorite. And the other daughters called her the governess. Maria was the third daughter. She's supposed to be the most beautiful and had really big blue eyes, sometimes called saucers or lanterns. She was really sociable. She was named after her paternal grandmother, so Nikki's mother. But she also suffered from a bit of depression. She was definitely like a middle child, you know, so she had like middle child syndrome. She also knew that she was unwanted because of her sex. And the other girls gave her the nickname of Fat Little Bow Wow.
What? That little Bow Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's really mean. They're probably just jealous because she was the prettiest.
Yeah. But she was the one that always liked to talk to the different soldiers and guards. And so she was always talking to them, getting sociable. The youngest, Anastasia, her name meant of the resurrection. And she is described as a force of nature. She always got the most attention. She was the jokester. She could always make everyone laugh, especially when everything went to shit and they were like, you know, very later on, she was the only one that could make her mother laugh. She was really energetic, and she is described as a bit of a tomboy. Her and Maria were called the little pair. And so the girls were kind of almost made of a unit. They were not really individuals, they were pairs, and they were dressed in pairs. So they always dressed Maria and Anastasia just like one another, and they dressed Tatiana and Olga just like one another. Which is kind of sad. They kind of lost some of their individualism because they were a part of a set almost.
Middle child syndrome. What does that mean, Taylor? I heard that little comment you made.
No, I don't
She was
mean it
not,
in a bad
she
way.
knew she was unwanted, is what you said.
Because she wasn't a boy. That's what I meant. I think she had a middle child, as in like she sometimes middle children can get, you know, there were five kids. She was right in the middle.
Middle ones
Sometimes they
get
can get,
neglected.
yeah, they get kind of overlooked sometimes. Let's go back to the rest of the family. So, like I said, the son Alexei had hemophilia, and this is the reason that Grigory Rasputin was brought in, and we all know of him. I'm sure us three, we learned about him through the movie Anastasia, the cartoon movie, which is not accurate, but he probably looked like that guy. He's pretty gross.
Also, did you know that Christopher Lloyd, who was Doc from Back to the Future, was the one that voiced Rasputin?
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I know.
That's cool.
And Meg Ryan was Anastasia. Kirsten Dunst was young Anastasia. John Cusack was Dimitri, who as a kid was very attractive as a cartoon character. And then Kelsey Grammer was Vlad. And I can't remember who played the bat. The bat. What was the bat's name?
Bartok.
Bartok.
In real life, Rasputin was a semi-literate 37-year-old pilgrim. I guess when they met him, he was 37. He was described as a mystic and a healer, and we know of him because of the sun. So in the autumn of 1907, Alexei fell in the park and he hurt his leg. You know, he's a typical kid, and he's like rambunctious. He's running around and he falls down. And as a child with hemophilia, it's very easy for this small injury to become a huge problem. And over the years, like they were very careful to keep him really safe, but like it was harder and harder for them to control because he's a growing boy, he's running around. But anyway, during this first event, they desperately called over Rasputin, and after he got there, he like prayed and everything, and the swelling stopped. It doesn't really make any sense, but it seems like Rasputin somehow was able to heal Alexei.
Sounds like a lucky coincidence.
Yeah, during this time, they used a early version of aspirin, and I can't remember the name, but Rasputin said no aspirin or whatever this was, no aspirin or drugs, and only prayer and spiritual healing. And it kind of makes sense that that helped because aspirin does what?
Well, aspirin's an antiplatelet, so it also like thins the blood and makes it easier to bleed. So he actually did a favor in that aspect.
Right. So maybe that explains why he was able to, you know, quote, help him because he prevented them from using the drugs that they didn't understand was hurting Alexei. So the parents fully believed him, especially Alex. I think Alex was much more a believer of Rasputin. And as someone who she thought could keep her son alive, of course she's going to keep this dude around, even though he was like gross. But the general public, they didn't understand why Rasputin was around, and he's around for a lot of the story. And so the general public, they just had this strange medicine man who's dirty, you know, around the couple, the leaders of Russia. And this really over time really hurts the reputation of the Tsar and Tsarina. Also, during this time and beyond, Alex is struggling with different ailments. She has leg pain, she has chest pain, she has shortness of breath. And she's really stressed out about Alexei and everything. The history chicks, and I say that when Alex was a child, she really messed up her legs. She got hurt. She ran through like a glass pane and she really messed up her legs. And this might have caused her leg pain for a long time. I also read that she had sciatica pain for even when she was first getting married to Nikki. So it was going on most of her adult life. And then she had a lot of heart pain. She was concerned her heart was always hurting. So a lot of times, Alex was in a wheelchair. She really couldn't walk very well. So sometimes you hear this attributed to her being a hypochondriac, but there could have been other causes. Maybe her anxiety was really exacerbating a possible condition she had. Either way, she was not always doing well.
I didn't know that about the mom, that she had some problems with her health.
Yeah. When the girls were growing up, each quote pair shared a room in a palace that had hundreds of rooms. Alex was a bit, you know, strict about how they were raised. They were often sleeping on like kind of like cots, which is kind of funny. And she made them make their own beds and pick up their toys and clean their room. So they were obviously spoiled in the sense that they were like grand duchesses of a huge empire. They also had some strictness in their life. So they were like, it's kind of funny. Like yeah, they're spoiled in that sense, but also they did have some structure.
Well, from all the things I've seen, it seems like they are all very close. And
Yes.
I
Yeah.
wonder if sharing with your sibling, growing up helped with that closeness.
Yeah, they were definitely very close. They were really isolated. They stayed at Peterhof, and the girls really didn't have any other playmates. They mostly just played with one another. They were very isolated. But they did bring tutors in, and the girls had what seems like a very good education. They spoke several languages. So they were smart growing up, but they were just all they really had was each other. Like I've heard them described as very, like even when they were older, they acted like they were younger, and because they didn't have a lot of exposure to the world. They were very isolated growing up.
Very sheltered.
Yes, that's a good word. During this time, when a child turned 16, they would come out to society. So that's what Olga did when she turned 16. Her parents gave her two necklaces. There was one that was of diamonds and one that was of pearls and a ring, and she got all dressed up for her party. I don't really know why, but for some reason, when you turn 16, the girls, or I guess in general, you're allowed to wear your hair down. But before you're 16, when they were in public, they always had their hair up. So this was like kind of a special thing for them to put their hair down. And when you come out, you have like all these different balls and things like that. But like I said, Olga and her sisters were very sheltered. And so when they would have these balls, they tended to be a bit awkward because they didn't really know how to interact with all these different people. This also meant that she could be ready for marriage. Different talks came out about marriages for not only Olga, but the rest of the daughters, even though Olga was very scared about getting married and she didn't want to leave Russia. There was talk of the girls marrying the different leaders of the Baltics, so Serbia, Romania, Greece, and Bulgaria. There's also an idea that David, Prince of Wales, who turns into, again, Edward VIII, he could have married either Olga or Tatiana. So it's kind of interesting to think about how history would have been different if David had married one of the daughters and gotten her out of Russia, and she could have been Queen of England.
Yeah, especially since he wasn't married when he became king, correct?
Yeah.
So the entire history of the English throne could be completely different.
Yes. And if that had happened, then one of the daughters could have introduced hemophilia to the British royal family.
That's very true.
Their marriage prospects were affected by the fact that they may be potential carriers of hemophilia. Again, the general public did not know that Alexei had it, but they knew that their grandmother at least was a carrier and that their mother might be. So that was a concern. In 1913, there was a celebration of the Romanov Tricentennial, I think is how you would say it, which is the celebration of 300 years of Romanovs on the Russian throne. Again, Russia was 1/6 of the world's surface, and St. Petersburg was one of the 6th largest cities in Europe. So they were in control of a huge portion of the world and a large population of the world. And so they had all these celebrations for this event, and the whole family was all decked out.
So I'm watching the very, very accurate movie Anastasia from 1997 cartoon, and at the beginning, the 300th anniversary or whatever, but it's 1916. So is that due to the weird calendar stuff or?
I think that's just because of the cartoon.
Because I was watching it and it said 1916, all in
Finally,
glitter and gold.
in the cartoon, Rasputin comes back from the dead and
And
tries to sabotage
with
Anastasia.
his friend the bat partook and all the weird grubs and
Obviously, I'm wrong, and this
ghouls.
cartoon movie is correct. But even though the Romanov family was celebrating, the Russian people did not have much to celebrate about. There are different stories of the daughters like having crushes on different soldiers and stuff, which is kind of cute. It's because it makes it them seem very relatable, even though they were like these grand duchesses and had their dad was like insanely rich. They were kind of relatable. When Olga turned 18, she had a crush on this soldier named Pavel something. And he liked her too. So they both liked each other. And at her little celebration party, she danced with him. But obviously, they could never get married. And he was encouraged to find a wife quickly, and he did. And so she had this little like childhood love thing, but it didn't last, obviously.
Aww.
Tatiana and Olga had at this point come out to society and they continued to attend balls and they loved it. They would go around and they would dance with everybody. Alex wouldn't really attend again because she had issues with her legs. And so their dad would attend, but he like didn't know how or who to introduce them to people. And so he was such an awkward dad. Nikki was just an awkward dude. He was not sociable. And so he didn't know how to help them come out to society. So they were a bit awkward when they would go to these balls. They were because they were very sheltered, but it seems like they had a really fun time.
It was probably hard having four daughters and your wife's not there to help you introduce them to society. And so you're kind of just like, okay, well, good luck.
Can't you imagine him being like, oh, like sick standing in the corner
Yeah, he sounds like our dad. If our dad took us, all three of us, to a
to a
dance
ball?
without mom, yeah, to a ball. Absolutely.
So the family was really, really close, and they're not relatable in the sense that the dad was a czar of Russia. But when you look at other royal families, like let's say you think of the Tudors, well, you don't think of them as growing up together. They had their own courts, they were not always together. But this family acted in private, at least, a lot more relatable to typical families. The siblings were close. The family was always together. They weren't off in different courts. They were side by side. So in that way, they're very relatable, but also they're incredibly rich and above our station. Also, I haven't gone into it here because I just don't have the time, and it's not really the point of the podcast, but Nicky was not a good ruler. He was not a good person. He didn't treat his subjects well. Alex thought that they were above others, and the idea of giving up the absolute monarchy to a constitutional monarchy was like the worst thing. So I don't want to paint Alex and Nikki as these great people because I think they love each other, and it seems like they were good parents. They loved their children, but as rulers, they did poorly, very poorly. And so I want to make that clear that during this time, Nikki's not a good ruler.
Yeah, he seemed kind of like he just didn't really know what was going on, and he was very sheltered himself, is what kind of what I've read. And I mean, that was kind of like the monarchies all over the world at that time too.
So I don't want to like paint him as this like great loving dad. Like I think he was a good dad. He was a very bad ruler. And I just don't have time to go into it now.
Well, the relationship between the crown and the royalty and the peasants was horrible. I think they had a lot of famines as well. There was just a lot of stuff, and they also had a war, and they had a lot of like their people dying.
Yeah, and so whenever the public would say like they want more things, the Russian family would be like, "Well, who are they to ask for that?" They were just so out of touch with the public. They were not even around. They didn't go and interact with the public at all. And part of that because there was a whole bunch of assassinations. At one point, Olga and Tatiana witnessed a important guy. They went to like a it was either like an opera or like a ballet or something like that, and they saw someone get assassinated. So assassinations were just a part of their life, which is crazy. There were assassination attempts on the previous emperors a lot, and so I don't think they even batted an eye.
Well, and assassination attempts were actually like a really big threat too, because think about
Empress
Sissy.
Cece.
Sissy, how she was like stabbed by an assassin and died. So definitely can happen.
And that brings me to June 28th, 1914, with the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, who was the heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne. And what does that cause?
Oh, I know. World War One.
Yes, you win. And whenever this happened, Nicky didn't even write it in his journal. Like I think they were just so used to assassinations, they're like, oh yeah, that one guy, he was murdered too. Like it didn't even faze them. But in mid-July, when they were all at dinner, they were told that Germany was now at war with Russia. And I'm not gonna go into like the complications of World War I and why it started. It was like caused by alliances and blah blah blah. I don't really want to go into it. But I will say that three leaders of countries that were involved in World War I were all first cousins. So we have George, we have Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany, and we have Nicholas II of Russia, all first cousins. So it was like a cousins war. And who in the family is German?
Alexandria.
Yes. This was one more thing to the Russian public not to like their empress because, oh, she's a German spy, like all that. And this, the outbreak of World War I ultimately resulted in the end of any kind of marriage talks for Olga and Tatiana. And the other two daughters did not get to come out to society because obviously there was a war going on. So I don't know about y'all, but I remember reading the Royal Diary series, one of which is focused on Anastasia. Lauren still has a great collection of these books, and she was nice enough to reread this book for this episode. So, Lauren, tell us what you think about it.
So the Royal Diary series in general, it's really great. It's an offshoot from the Dear America books, which were written from the point of view of a girl, teenage girl, middle school, junior high age girl who grew up in America during different time periods. And so they made these Royal Diary series as well that focused on the royalty around the world. So there's a ton of them. I loved them as a child. And I had Anastasia. And unfortunately, Anastasia is just a really sad story. The book starts off in 1914 when, she is just talking about the ball. And so it talks about the different palaces, but then it kind of gets a little darker towards the end, essentially because it talks a lot about, their interactions with Rasputin and her brother's illness, and then also her father's abdication of the throne. And so one of the last things that is written in the passage is that she's talking to her sister and they're talking about the guards and being scared. And she says, I have this diary where I have written my inner thoughts and I don't want the guards to know certain things, such as hiding jewels for instance. And then it's talking about her and her sister talking about the jewels being sewn into their clothes, as well as what to do with the diary. So reading this as a young child, I mean, granted, I was probably like 12 or 13. It was such a sad one. It's my favorite Royal Diaries book, but it does a really good job at the end, kind of talking about why this happened, the political undercurrent, as well as just giving more information about the girls, as well as it always has little pictures in it, which I think are really fun. So it ends like a month before she's killed.
Like, I remember reading the books, but I don't remember that one ex individually because I mostly remember the Dear America books.
Well, Royal Diaries had Cleopatra and Isabella of Castile and Marie Antoinette, which was my favorite.
I know. And Mary Queen of Scots is also on there.
Yeah, Mary Queen of Scots. It also had Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Christina of Sweden.
Yes, that one. And then there was also one about Japan and one about Korea.
And there's one about Hawaii, a Hawaiian princess, and Queen Nzinga, and she was queen of a kingdom in Africa,
Yes.
and there's a few others that I can't really remember. Elizabeth the First is also one.
Yeah, Elizabeth the First is one. I think there is one for Catherine the Great, but I've
Yeah,
never
there
had that
is.
one. It was later.
Right.
I have collected them and I will give them to my daughter. Hopefully she'll like to read.
So we're gonna take obviously a bit of a turn. So. They are in the midst of World War I, which means that there is a shortage of nurses. And so the two oldest daughters, Olga and Tatiana, join the Red Cross and become nurses through training. And they're not doing it for show. They're not doing it for like photo ops. They actually were trained to be nurses. Because at this point, they were in their late teens, early 20s. And Alex also joined the war effort, helping organize resupply efforts for around the country. The younger girls, they could not be nurses, but they still were like patronesses for hospitals. Olga and Tatiana were really involved in helping the wounded, and they were seeing really serious cases, that you would see in war, like severed wounds, like cutting off of appendages, sewing up lacerations, things like that. They were really involved. But Olga really struggled with that more than Tatiana did. Tatiana was a lot more reserved. She could really keep her like emotions in check. And Olga, I think she kind of wore her emotions on her sleeve. And so she kind of struggled with, I'm sure, the gravity of seeing all of these wounded soldiers really was a lot for them. And at one point, she had anemia. I read that they gave her arsenic injections for anemia, which also is weirdly gives off the smell of garlic. So she would complain about smelling like garlic. And obviously, like, medicine is way more advanced now, but like, what's the reasoning for giving arsenic injections?
I don't know.
Confused looks from Lauren and Emily.
I don't think there is a reason to do that. It's called modern medicine was not yet a thing.
Ugh. I agree. Also, Nikki was gone a lot during this time, and Rasputin was still around, obviously, because he was kind of taking care of Alexei. But again, the public didn't know that. And so all these rumors were going around that, oh, Rasputin, he's controlling the Tsar. He's telling him what to do, how to run the country, how to, like, run the war, and he's fucking the Empress, is what people were saying. Now, there's no evidence of this, but rumors abounded that he was involved with Alex, which, again, it's not helping anyone's reputation.
Especially because he definitely looked like Rasputin from the movie. He was very creepy looking. If you look at pictures of him, he had like that long stringy hair, that like long beard, and looked really pale and kind of sickly. Like he looked just not pleasant.
He was close to Alex and the girls. I read that Nikki kind of tolerated him. I don't think Nikki was really, liked him, but he just dealt with him because of how much Alex thought he was helping. Like, the girls loved Rasputin. And with Nikki being gone during the war, people were like, oh, Rasputin's in charge. At one point, he had to like be sent away because he was like bragging about being so close to Alex, and it didn't help the rumors. The war was beginning to take its toll on the girls and Alex, and this was by March 1916. So the war's been going on for a little bit. Alex is becoming more and more distressed. Again, she has all those health problems, right? She has like heart pain, her legs are always hurting. She it, like often is like in bed, or she's always lying down. She was not doing well. She really missed her husband, and she had all these kids she was taking care of. I think she was like constantly extremely stressed, is what it sounds like to me. And the Russian people were also becoming more distressed. It was really cold. They had hunger. There were food shortages. Obviously, people were out at war. They were dying at war. There were all these strikes. There were all of these food riots. Discontentment on the streets. And then comes the murder of Grigory Rasputin. Dun dun dun. It was in December of 1916. I read that he thought the war was a terrible idea, so he became an alcoholic basically, and he was really disliked. It took a while to kill him. They poisoned him, they shot him, and they dumped his body in the river. And whenever they found his body, obviously, like the Tsarina and the daughters, they were just so distraught. But the people of Russia were rejoicing. It's a sign that you were not a good person, probably. And Alex, she was devastated because now who would heal her son? Who was going to heal the heir to the Russian throne? The girls also, again, were very upset about his death. They were all very close to him. Again, Russia, worse and worse. Still lack of food, there's riot, the ongoing war. And again, the family, the royal family, seems very disconnected. Revolution was being whispered across Russia. Basically, everything's falling apart. Nikki is far away and he's trying to get home to his family. Meanwhile, one by one, the daughters are getting sick with measles, like deathly sick with measles. But at one point, Tatiana can't hear. Their fevers are crazy high. Can y'all explain what happens when you get the measles?
So the measles is a viral illness. It usually causes a rash, fever, sore throat, and it can be pretty serious. It's definitely very, very, very contagious. We now vaccinate against it. All kids get the MMR vaccine, which is measles, mumps, and rubella. So we haven't seen a ton of cases since the vaccination came out. The problem with measles is that it can cause a lot of issues, like long term, as well as during the acute phase of the illness. People can get very, very sick, and they can also have sort of like an encephalitis called a, like a, it's more of like a meningoencephalitis that can occur months to years after.
Also, I don't really know why, but it said that their hair started falling out, and so they shaved their head. So you see photos of the girls with no hair, and Alexei shaved his head as like, oh, like in solidarity. So I'm not sure if it was the medicine they were taking or something, but they lost all their hair and they just shaved it off.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Your body can have like this stress response where you just lose hair, or it could have been from them being so sick. I'm not sure.
So anyway, the kids are definitely ill. The country is falling apart, and Nicky is trying to get back to the family, but on the train he gets stopped and they want him to abdicate. They're like, dude, you're doing a terrible job. So on March 15th, 1917, Nicholas II, Tsar of Russia, abdicated for himself and his son. He knew that if his son were to be on the throne, then the family would be separated from Alexei, and they did not want to be away from each other. So he's like, I'm gonna advocate for my son. Also, he knew that he had hemophilia. He was very ill. Alexei probably wasn't gonna live very long. So the throne then went to Nicholas's little brother, Mikhail, or like Michael, I think is how you probably would pronounce it. And he was like, also, no, thank you, because he saw what was going on in Russia. So essentially, at this point, there was no person on the throne in Russia, which would have been a huge shocker for the whole world. Alex burned all of her old journals and letters because she was fearful that they would get into the wrong hands and they would be used against her and Nicholas. I'm sure she was thinking about other revolutions, well, the French Revolution, and what happens to the leaders of France during the French Revolution.
With their head.
Exactly. So she was probably afraid that that would be used against them and they could be executed, which doesn't really help, but that's what they were thinking. And now their palace that they have been living in, that was their home, their sanctuary, is now basically turned into a jail because they're on house arrest.
House arrest reminds me of being stuck in my house during COVID. We have nothing to do, and you come up with all types of hobbies.
Their daily lives became very boring and mundane. Normally, the soldiers before had been very kind. The family was of high rank, so they were treated very well, but now the soldiers could act however they wanted to, and so they could act very gruff. At one point, Alex and Nikki had been, they were separated in fear that they were colluding with one another, which, I mean, really, what could they possibly do? There was talk about the royal family getting out of Russia, right? They want to get to safety, maybe another country. Again, they were all related. Nicholas's first cousin was George the First of the United Kingdom. But the new Russian government did not want them to go. They thought that Nikki knew too many state secrets. Also, if you were a ruler of another country and you brought in the royal family of a country that now was having a revolution, you could spark a revolution in your own country. So it would have been risky for, let's say, the United Kingdom to bring in this family and fear that they could cause a revolution in the United Kingdom.
Emily, what is the revolution song from Les Mis? Can you hear the people singing the songs
Of
of
angry
angry
men.
men?
It is a song. Da
Again,
da
the
da
beating of your heart, the beating of the drums.
I'm gonna leave that in for the episode, just so you know. Good job. So it was decided the family should be moved. Wherever this family is, they're gonna bring in loyalists. And so they were moved out east, Siberia, in a town called Tobolsk, in the governor's house. It was like a 5-day trip to this location. It was really far away. And they're dropping down in like status here, like, or the quality of where they're staying is definitely dropping down. During the winter, the house was so cold that the girls were all in one room, and the room was so cold they would like wear all of their clothes. And they couldn't write letters because their hands couldn't write. They were attracting loyalists there too. They were being reduced in things like food and clothing. And again, they were moved, this time to Ekaterinburg. But they were this time when they were moved, they were split up. So you had Alex, Nikki, and Maria. They went together first because Alexei wasn't doing well. He had hurt himself. Because of again, he's of his hemophilia, and he couldn't be moved. I don't think he ever walked again. Olga, Tatiana, and Anastasia had been told by their mother to, quote, dispose of the medicines as agreed. What do you think that means?
Oh, the medicines. You mean the jewels?
Yes. So that was basically a code to hide all of their like crazy priceless jewels in their underclothes, like their corsets and stuff like that, to keep safe. And so that's what the girls were doing before they were finally moved to Ekaterinburg. This house was even shittier than the other one, and the windows were all painted over. They were really restricted what they could do. But the family would always be a target for loyalists. So the government decided that they would take care of the family in their way. So in the early morning, like middle of the night of July 17th, 1918, the family was woken up and told that there was unrest in the city or the little town, and they had to go down to the basement. So they went down there, they carried down Alexei because he couldn't walk, and they had also had like a few servants, nurses and stuff like that with them. And they were kind of lined up in a special way against the wall, and a military person or someone, you know, whoever, they came in and they told them that it had been decided that they would be executed. And then right away they started firing. So it was like a firing squad. And the parents died instantly. But some of the daughters were wearing those corsets that had all of those jewels sewn in. And so they effectively, on accident, made bulletproof vests. And so the soldiers were confused, like, why are these people still alive? Just because their bullets were ricocheting off these diamond encrusted corsets. And so some of the daughters did not die quickly, and they suffered a lot until they finally did kill them. The whole family died on this day. They uncovered the bodies much later, and they actually waited until the fall of the Soviet Union because of the state of the government. But because of like how shady this murder was, there was rumors for a long time that one of the daughters, often Anastasia, had survived. And so several different women came forward saying, "Oh, like I am Anastasia," but they were all wrong. And later on, it was proven that the whole family had died. Prince Philip, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II of the United Kingdom, he gave his DNA because he was related to them on his mother's side to help identify the bodies. And they were all laid to rest together, finally.
Well, that was depressing.
It is a very sad episode.
And I think that because it's so depressing, it really leads people to want to believe that somebody escaped. And so that's probably why they had those women that essentially were like, "Oh, I'm Anastasia, but I survived." And because of the jewel situation and all of that, like it's could, you're in the back of your mind, like you're like, "Well, maybe it could happen."
Right.
But I think it's just because you want to believe that something better could be the ending.
I think it's also because the murders were very, it was murky, right? Like they didn't announce it right away. At first they said, oh, only Nikki died. And then they announced later that whole family had died, but they didn't show bodies. And so I think when it's sketchy looking, stories will arrive a lot more. You can kind of compare it to the princess in the tower. During the Wars of the Roses back in England, the two sons of Edward IV of England who died, and then Richard III got on the throne. And so during that time, people also came forward and said, oh, I am one of the princess, because their bodies were never found during that time. And so it makes it easier for imposters to come in and say, like, that's me.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, that's the story of the Roman, a bit of a condensed story of the Romanov daughters. We could do, like, if we really wanted to, we could do like several episodes on this family, but maybe for a future date. You can hear about in more detail about the family from the History Chicks, which go a bit more into their lives if you would like to do that. And again, you can listen to the Queen's podcast, which goes into detail about Nikki's mother, Maria. And I read the book, The Romanov Sisters, The Lost Lives of the Daughters of Nicholas and Alexandra, which was a very good book. It was really informative. Most of my information came from it. Now, to lighten the mood a bit, Emily, will you tell us about the plot of the movie Anastasia?
All right, 1997, a cartoon movie comes out about Anastasia. And oh my gosh, what a great movie that is! Got some bangers on there. Like Lauren said, got some really famous people: Meg Ryan, Kirsten Dunst, Kelsey Grammer, Christopher Lloyd playing all these parts. The plot is you see the Russian palace, and it's the 300th anniversary of the Russian Empire. And there's a big ball. Anastasia is a little girl, and she's so happy. And they're all dancing, and she sees the grandma. And then she and the grandma have a really close relationship. The grandma's about to go to Paris, and so she gives her a necklace for the special music box that needs the key. Then the scary Rasputin comes in and is like, "I'm gonna kill everybody. I hate you." And he's gross and like slimy, and he sold his soul for magic. And he has a little bat named Bartok that talks. Anyway, so he curses the family. He's like, "I'm gonna kill all you and mother effers." And then, what happens? Well, there's a big unrest in Russia. They knock over the statue, and then they're all trying to get the kids, and Anastasia's trying to escape, but then she forgets her music box, so her and grandma
Grandmama try to go get back and get it, and then they go back to the room, and then the soldiers are shooting into the room, and so Dimitri's the little servant boy, and he shows them the way out through the servants' quarters, and it helps them escape, but he gets hurt. He has a music box, and Grandmama and Anastasia escape, but Anastasia gets hurt, has a head injury, and falls down, and Grandmama escapes to Paris. Fast forward to Anya, aka Anastasia, is an
An
orphan.
orphan.
She graduates from the orphanage, and she gets to go to work in the fish factory. But then she founds a dog, and the dog's like, "Let's go to St. Petersburg." So she does. She is trying to go to Paris, and they're
Meanwhile,
like,
she doesn't know who she is.
"Yeah, oh, that's right, she has amnesia." Sorry. And she's trying to go to Paris, and the guy's like, "Exit visas." She's like, "What's an exit visa?" And they're like, "Yo, see Dimitri. He'll help you. He is a really kind of sketchy guy." And so she finds Dimitri. Dimitri and Vlad are like these really sketchy guys that are like, "Yeah, let's pretend you're Anastasia and get the money from the grandmama." So Anya's like, "I guess, whatever. I kind of look like her." There's a couple singing episodes, beautiful music. Meanwhile, Bartok realizes that Anya is Anastasia, and that wakes up all the demons. That wakes up Rasputin, who's hanging out in the underworld. Another great musical excerpt from Rasputin, one of the best songs. In the dark of the night, people will find her, find her.
In the
It's a great song. Anyway, so all is well. They're trying to teach Anya how to be Anastasia. But she's kind of remembering, like, this, I think I know some of this stuff. Anyway, there's a little like flirting between Anya and Dimitri. Rasputin's, tracking them, causing some havoc. But they get closer and closer to Paris. Oh, there's a part where they're on a boat and they're going, from Russia to Paris, and they have to go through the North Sea, and the demons hypnotize Anya. And she almost jumps into the freaking ocean. And all I can think about during that part are those TikToks of the North Sea where it's like, yo ho. And the boat's rocking and stuff. Anyway, they survive. So they keep going and they're getting to Paris and they finally get to have the chance to meet Grandmama. Grandma's like, "I'm tired of meeting all these freaking lookalikes and these fakes. Like, I'm lonely and I'm sad, and this is gets my hopes up." But Dimitri's like, "Oh my gosh, actually, this is her because I was the servant boy that found the music box." And so Grandma's like, I don't want to see anybody else." And he's like, "No, this is really her." And she's like, "No, you're just trying to make money." And Ani hears that and she gets mad and she leaves. And then Dimitri comes back and she like kidnaps the grandma and is like, "This is her." And she's like, "Fine, whatever." And then they talk and she's like, "Oh my gosh, far away, long ago." And grandmama's like, "Oh my gosh, this is my granddaughter." Ah! And they're all happy and happy, and they're just like so excited that they found each other after all these years. Dimitri's depressed AF. He's like, "Well, I gotta go. I mean, I can't stick around. Like, she's, the princess." And so then he tries to leave. Anya gets tricked, and she's in a courtyard with all these like bushes and like a maze. And then she meets up with Rasputin, who's like, "Hey, bitch, I'm about to kill you." And she's getting like attacked by this crazy demon guy, and who comes to save her? But Dimitri. And they fight and fight, and then Dimitri gets hurt and he's knocked out. And then what happens? Well, Anya steps on that little vial of demons and kills Rasputin. He turns into a freaking dusty skeleton man and blows away into the wind, and the Paris, he just blows away to the Paris skies, killing him. And then Dimitri and Anastasia get together and they go off and get eloped, and everyone's happy. The end.
Wonderful. Very descriptive. I liked
That's
it.
how I like to think about what really happened instead of the actual story, which is very depressing.
They're very, very great songs.
Oh man.
Much, much happier ending than
You
what really
know,
happened.
there's a rumor in St. Petersburg. Have you heard? There's a saying on the streets.
And there was a video game.
Oh,
Or a computer
yes. Oh, yeah.
game.
So I wrote that down in my notes. Oh my gosh, the video game was really good. I
It was really
remember
hard.
it was really, really hard. Yeah, there was like and the really good side by sides from the movie too, like very, very similar. But yeah, there's all some really hard challenges, and yeah, I don't know if we ever actually finished it.
No, we did. I distinctly remember finally beating the game because it was all these secret, stupid passages, and it was like one dumb passage we could not figure out. And finally, and distinctly finding the passageway and beating the game.
That movie and Anastasia herself played a big role and impacted my life when I was a little girl, even though the story was made up, but kind of true, but mostly made up. But yeah, the real story is sad, and those kids, you know, they couldn't help who their parents were and what family they got born into. And
They definitely didn't deserve it because they were so young and so sheltered. They didn't really have any idea what was going on in the world, you know, or even in their own like country. So
I wonder how much it would have been different if the first child would have been a boy instead of a girl. You know, because there are four girls
four.
in a row, and then they don't like the mom anyway.
It probably would have possibly still happened because of all the war and the
Yeah.
famine, all the other underlying political issues, but maybe it wouldn't have happened.
Right. Also, the oldest daughter, I believe she was about 23 when they were killed. And so if she was a son and they would have had like a, you know, like a male heir that was of age that maybe could have taken over the throne versus like an heir that, you know, Alexei was like a young teen.
Yeah, and he had a lot of health problems. Right.
Also, if one of the daughters had already married, so if Olga had gone off and married David, who turned into Edward the Eighth, she would have lived. And so it would have resulted in like the Romanov family line at least surviving with the daughter, and they and the current British family would be very different.
That's true.
Well, thank you for listening to our episode about the Romanov sisters. If you like our podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review on whatever platform you like to listen to us on, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Peace.
Thank you.